Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 205 on a Tuesday afternoon. Gorgeous weather out there. I think tomorrow's supposed to have some rain move in, but just like normal rain. It seems to me, just sort of my take on it, is we haven't had much normal. That's not true. I've never had a electric bill as low as it was this month because I haven't had my heat or air conditioning on, so that's been pretty normal. Mm-hmm. But like when it rains, it's raining 9 inches, you know? So tomorrow's just supposed to be like a little light little November rain. Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it going to be cold November rain?
Yes, it is. I got it. Don't worry. I got it.
You're like the only one.
I get it.
You did?
Yeah.
What is it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I knew he didn't
Google
get it.
It's a song, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it is a song. Razor's Edge?
Yes. Let's talk about Bernie Sanders, because he was on CNN this weekend.
I thought you meant Bernie Nicholas.
Yeah. You know what? I have some grievances about Bernie that I'm ready to air out.
I was like, wow, look at Rage.
Damn nice.
Yeah, I'm sick of this guy. Let me tell you why.
Says, like, we got to talk about Bernie already.
we got a real problem on Cable X.
Hey, in this town, there is only one Bernie, and it ain't Sanders.
Here we go.
So Bernie Sanders was on CNN's State of the Union this weekend, and he was asked about the blowback he received for going on Joe Rogan's show back in 2020 after receiving his endorsement for the Democratic nominee at the time. And he said, look, if you're going to have an argument with Rogan, agree with him, disagree with him, but what's the problem with going on these shows? It's hard for me to understand that. He went on to say he still doesn't see a problem in going on his show and having a conversation. I find it very interesting that people are still giving him grief 4 years after the fact for going on the program. But why would it be a big deal for him to go sit down and talk to someone who maybe has a different point of view?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I'm kind of a Kevin Wheeler on this. I think that if you want to be a public figure, you should have the brain and the balls to talk to anybody.
Anybody, anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
And you should be able to take any questions, any challenges to your positions, and defend them. Otherwise,
now,
don't run.
I would draw lines, though. I wouldn't talk to Nick Fuentes. I wouldn't talk to neo-Nazis, but I don't think Joe Rogan is any of those things.
No, he's not. He can be controversial, and he can be wrong on things and right on other things, and maybe be a critic of yours, but you should be able to handle that, which is why I would love it to be, it can't be, I would love it to be required that every president has to sit down with every one of the major news organizations, or every candidate.
It should
has
be expected.
To. Yeah, that you have to sit down with all of them. So, and that means the Democrat going on OAN.
Yeah.
And going on anywhere. You should be able to handle anything if you're going to be that position.
The best way, I think, is just to be available all the time. Like the little things that that the presidents do outside the helicopter, you know, like do those all the time. Do them every day. Make yourself available like almost literally every day for a few minutes. Then it doesn't become such a big deal.
Yeah.
And if you misspeak, everyone misspeaks. You know, this one thing I've always had a lot of confidence if I was ever like someone tried to cancel me. I have 24 years. I feel like if I said something I shouldn't say, or I literally said the wrong word or something like that, okay, that's the very, very tippy top of Everest. I have 24 years of being reasonable. And I think that if you were the president of the United States or a senator or whatever it happens to be, you should have the intellectual confidence to be interviewed anytime, anywhere.
Well, you're like, also when you're running for president, you are a big dog. And nobody should scare you. You should be the one that they're afraid of challenging, right? Like a person that's been critical of you when you're not there should be like, oh, crap, I got to do this to their face because they're going to know their stuff. Like that's the personality what it should be.
I agree.
It shouldn't be sensitive, don't criticize me, or I can't handle difficult questions because I'm not good on camera. Well, if you're none of those things, then stop running. Just go do something else.
I didn't see that hit on CNN, Rach. Was he apologetic?
No, he was like, I don't understand why I would have to apologize for that. He also, I thought of Andrew. He said in the same interview, I believe, that he believes that the Democrats have abandoned working class people, and that's why they lost the election. He didn't go with the whole, like, oh, we should be going more farther to the left. He just said we need to be focusing on these class issues because the working class feels like we have left them behind.
I really think in a big global 30,000 foot way, we get too much into the minutia and too much into the detail. And I think it's closer to reality that most of the country is casual about politics. We're just not used to it because we're not casual about politics, and the people we have on our show are not casual about politics, but that we don't represent the average person. And so the average person out there, I think they lick their finger, put it in the air, and they go, okay, this guy is really rude and boorish, but he seems to understand my life. And he seems like he's going to fight for me. And these people, as David Axelrod put it, seem like a bunch of smarty pants, college educated know-it-alls. You know, I mean, that's David Axelrod saying that about his own party. And I think that really is a lot of what it came down to. I don't think people were going down deep on Trump and, well, he said this or he was convicted of that, or even on Kamala. Well, she doesn't have the policy I'm looking for. I just think they looked at it and said, these guys are platitudes and pie in the sky, and this guy's talking about meat and potatoes, and he seems like he's kind of full of crap, that he's going to solve everything in 24 hours, but at least he's got confidence.
I mean, I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned. Right. Because, you know, look, I come up in the sports background and we all love to say you learn a lot more losing than you do when you win. Right. What you learn when you win was, OK, we did that right. We won. But when you lose, that's where you take lessons and you have to adapt and adjust. And you can't just be like, and I know there are a lot of people that are blaming certain voters for not coming out or certain demographics for changing. That's not what it's about. It's you. You have to change. You're selling a product. You have to find the appeal to the person you want to buy your product. But that's what you're doing when you're running for a high office. And if you don't have the right sales pitch or you don't have the right product to sell, you're going to lose.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about in Razor's Edge today, kind of a continuation of what we touched on briefly at the end of the show yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, Dave, you brought up Nick Fuentes. I guess that's how you pronounce his name. I don't pay attention to this loser. He's a Nazi from what I understand and just like a horrible person. He has been saying, I guess, on Twitter or whatever, and a lot of people have picked it up ever since the election. He's been saying your body, my choice as a way to get under the skin of women, because obviously the phrase is my body, my choice. He's been saying your body, my choice. And I've seen a lot of reaction to that, especially on TikTok. And I'm sure it's just the algorithm I'm on. Here's my hot take on the situation. Obviously, a horribly upsetting thing to say. It's designed to upset you.
Yep.
So anytime you give a reaction to someone like that, I think you lose. Like, even if you think you have the ultimate own, I think you lose. I'm losing talking about it now on the air. I'm just trying to get my message across, which is I don't think we, ladies, I don't think we should be posting about this. I don't think we should be trying to get the upper hand. There is no upper hand to be gotten when someone's speaking to you like that. The only thing you can do is meet it with silence and go on and live your life in a dignified and proper way. I think we put way too much emphasis on other people's words and trying to control what they're going to say. You cannot control what a piece of trash says about you. You can't, you don't have any control over that. You only have control over your own reaction to it.
What is that? I know you so well, but I've never asked you this. So with the election going the way it didn't go the way I wanted, but I'm a well-to-do white guy.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be okay. No one's gunning for me. What's it like to have people specifically saying things like that that are directly meant to demean you, to take your power away?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel nice. And I 100% understand the instinct to fight back. And I think in many cases, we should fight back. I'm just saying, when you're tangling with a person of this low of a caliber, you are wrestling. Like, what's it say? Like, you should never wrestle a pig because you just get dirty and the pig likes it. Like, don't do it. Like, don't. There are certain things we just shouldn't engage. the best thing to do is to just be like, hey, I'm not you, bro, and move on with your day. And I think we just, I think our culture has put way too much emphasis on like, we can control the narrative, we can fight back, we can do this. Fighting back is great, but putting too much attention on stuff like that does nothing but amplify it. Like I said, I'm losing right now by talking about it. I just want to put it out there as some food for thought. There are times where you should just ignore. And I think this is one of those cases.
Yeah. Rich, I don't think you're losing by doing this. I think there's a couple things that there's a difference, though. Your point about engaging with that person or, you know, stitching them on TikTok or retweeting them or owning them on social media, that's doing exactly what you're talking about. You're feeding the monster because they are rage farming. And the engagement is what gets them what they want, the attention, and it gets them money, right? But I think there's value in pointing out that that's what they're doing.
Yes.
Letting people know, when you see that stuff, they are just baiting you. And if you know that, then you can just leave it there. Don't take the bait.
Because it doesn't change this guy's mind. He's not going like, oh, you got me. I'm changing my ways now. He's making his money doing this.
Yep.
He doesn't have a conscience.
No, he's thinking, thank you very much.
Exactly. Does it make you actually feel any better to engage with this person? I'm going to guess probably not. You're probably uploading that video and your hands are probably trembling and you're having this emotional experience. You can skip that. You don't have to be the hero here because there is not a hero to be had. It's just... you've just been, you can just choose not to engage. Sometimes I just feel like that's the cleanest way to deal with a situation like this. It's not fair that people talk like that. It's not fair, but sometimes life isn't fair and you just have to accept that and you have to move on as best as you can.
Especially important for people my age. Like, I'm a rare duck that I don't have social media. I know all about it, and I have to deal with it, but I don't know the rules, I don't know the mores, I don't know the ins and the outs. And so for someone my age, especially a female who it's targeted at, your reaction is, it's time to stand up and fight back. So I think it's good advice, because a lot of people my age would not understand what you just said.
Yes. Now, the more important the person, the more you have to go after that, right? Like if that's somebody that's a nationally elected official, I think you have to go after them. If it's just a dumbass like Nick Fuentes, you don't have to take them down. Everybody knows what he is, right? It's not a secret. It's not fooling anybody. The people that agree with him are bad people like him with bad ideas. And everybody else knows he's an idiot. But there is, I do think there's value for all generations to understand like the literacy of social media. This is what they're trying to do. This is what, I mean, again, they literally profit off of engagement. And the best way to get engagement is to make people mad.
I'm not a religious person, but that Jesus guy said a lot of smart stuff, right? Just turn the other cheek. Sometimes that's what you got to do.
I mean, in this case, yeah.
Welcome back, guys. DGS 222 on a Tuesday afternoon. Today is the first day of our Operation Food Search and Hardee's campaign. So for the next month or so, a little over a month, we go until December 20th, which is when we'll do our live show out in the valley. And between now and then, we're just hoping that you will go to Hardee's as much as you can. You can round up. That's always a great way to do it. I love when Schnucks does that. I always round up for whatever it happens to be. You can pay a dollar and you can get a DGS me looking like Rudolph sticker, which we've yet to see those yet. They'll be in next week. And you can give more. We had Kathleen come through and give $250 this morning at a Hardee's. And the reason for that is that that is exactly how much it costs to do the backpack program for one child for an entire year. So if you and your family have a couple of nickels and you want to set a good example for your kids, $250 will sponsor a child who does not have food at home on the weekends. And Operation Food Search will put together a backpack for them and their siblings and send them home so that they can eat on the weekends. It's very sad to even talk about. Sometimes it sounds crazy coming out of my mouth, but that's the world we live in and the society we have. And so we need to help out as much as we can. Andrew, so many things from you. You were gone today and you came back with so much material. First of all, you're having trouble making friends?
I'm sorry.
Yes. I am having a little trouble making friends. Sorry, I just got a big text.
From a friend.
From a friend. Someone who wants to be your buddy?
No. Yes, I am having trouble making friends. I am... So, you know, I've been going to my little game night
Magic,
thing,
yeah.
and I've been trying to make friends with all of the other boys there, right?
Yeah.
I've been trying to, and I just feel like super uncomfortable doing it. I mean, it literally feels like I'm in like elementary school again, and I'm like walking up to all the like you know stranger kids who are wearing you know t-shirts of the cartoons I like, and I'm just like, ooh. What are you guys talking about? Part of it doesn't help is that a few of them are already like very, very close friends and have been for many years. They work together. They've been like best friends since high school. Not at all. They're all being extremely warm and extremely welcoming, but there are times where I've tried to break in and like, you know, I'll try real, like they're all discussing like maybe like plans of something they're going to do after. And I'll try like real hard to get out. And they're like, yeah. Well.
I feel you. We, at Dad's Day, Phoebe's roommate Stella, her dad, Lance, was there. And we really hit it off. Like, we sat next to each other at the game. We went to dinner afterwards. We talked about, hey, we have to go see a Chiefs game. And that's the first even close to friend I've made in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But yeah,
just it's so rare for older guys to meet new people and make new friends.
It's hard to do, and I do think, for what it's worth, I do think I'm doing an okay job. I'm using my tried and true method for friendships, which is just I just insert myself around that person, whether they want it.
You work
or
with
not.
Wheeler,
yeah, whether they want it or not. Mm-hmm. Like you're gonna be
life.
My. I've chosen you to be my friend. You're gonna be my friend whether you want to or not. And then eventually they warm up to me, I guess.
It's like Donald Trump protecting women, whether you like it or not.
Exactly. Whether you like it or not, you're going to be my friend, period. And it's been going pretty well, but I've just been stunned by how much I feel like a little kid again. You know what I mean? And then you can tell, like I said, you can tell when you overstep. I'm like, oh, well, we're going to be doing this. What are you guys going to be doing? And they're like, we don't really know yet. And I can tell, like, okay, I've overstepped. I've overstepped a little bit,
sounds
I fear.
Like you're doing okay.
It's
and
going
speaking
okay.
of friendship, you were heartened by Simon and Garfunkel reuniting?
Yeah, I think that's really nice. I'm like I put on the thing, I'm a big loser nerd, so I love Simon and Garfunkel, and I always have. And I never understood, like, being into them from, like, a young age. Stop laughing.
Taking a swipe at the Simon and Garfunkel fans out
well,
there.
Well, look, we know, all right? We know what we are. And I never understood, because I've been a fan of them since I was like a little kid. I didn't really understand the world, and I just never got why people would get into like a partnership like this,
I think two stories may fit together. You're having trouble finding friends because you're a Simon and Garfunkel fan.
I think that's probably the problem. They found out that I'm a.
Like, so are you more of a Simon or more of a Garfunkel guy?
See, here's the thing. I'm a Garf
who's
boy
a Garf?
In more
oh,
ways
you
than
are.
One.
I was like, who's a Garfunkel guy?
Garfield, Garfunk,
Garfunk. Garf. What's interesting is that Garfunk takes all the heat in the story of them kind of reuniting and becoming friends again. He says it was entirely his fault. You kind of would assume that maybe it was something that Paul Simon did or said because he has had kind of the more successful career. But Garfunkel takes square blame. He called Simon and said, hey, how come, you know, they're both in their 80s now. He's
wow,
like, I want to be, I know, right? He said, I want to be friends. I don't understand why we're not friends anymore. And Simon says, Simon says it's because you said a bunch of stuff in an interview that was like really mean to me and really hurtful. And I just did not feel like I could even look you in the eye after that. I was so hurt and so upset by it. And
Garfunkel disowned it.
And Garfunkel was like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I didn't mean for it to hurt you like that, but I definitely said all of those things. Yeah, it's really great. It's really sweet. They said it's not going to like really kind of turn into anything because they're both like, you know,
80.
Yeah, I think they're like 83 years old, both of them. But it's just nice to see them be friends again.
Welcome back.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Guys, DGS on KMOX. The whole show is falling apart. The whole show is falling apart. Everyone that we had booked is out, and our studio sucks, and no one knows how to fix it. And there's only one man that can make this all come together, and that's Bob Ramsey.
Nice, and we got Bob.
There's so much pressure on the rammer right now. What's up, Bob?
What the heck do I have to fix now?
I know, right? Story of your life.
Rammer, when can you be here, buddy? We need you.
Bring in the rammer. It's all going to hell in a handbasket.
Well, you know, I feel like Mr. Wolf in
Winston.
You know, come in and. Yeah, I'm ready to fix things.
The old fixer, Winston Wolf. I love it. So
that's right.
We used to see you all the time when you'd be on the think tank. We need to get you back in on the think tank. What's new with Ramsey? What's new with the Ramsey clan? What's new in Bob's world?
Well, you know, I should be pretty much an empty nester by now, but the nest seems to be getting fuller rather than emptier.
It has a way of going that way sometimes.
Yeah. No, so my oldest kids have graduated college, but they're at home as they're kind of making their way. My youngest is away at college, but we're having fun. It's all really good. I actually am very thankful for that. Anytime, and I know you, Dave, feel the same way about yours.
You bet.
Anytime I can spend even a few minutes with him every day, it's really fun.
You know, I was going to talk about this outside of your segment, but it's a perfect segue into it. So Phoebe's 19. She's a sophomore at KU. She's trying to figure out who she is, what she is, what she wants to do for a living. And we all went through that, and we remembered those feelings. But when your kids go through it, you realize how kind of ridiculous it is to take a 19-year-old kid, they're still kids at 19, you know, definitely this generation, and be like, okay, you got 4 years on the outside to figure out what you're going to do, and you can change it, but it's going to be difficult, and you can change your major, but that's going to be difficult, and it's just like so much pressure on young kids.
Yeah, and you kind of, you know, the older school part of our brains wants to go, okay, what's your plan? Let's get it going. Let's execute. Let's go, go, go. And that's just not the reality, I think. It probably never has been for anybody over the years, but even now, I think it's a little tougher. There's so much input for kids to try and figure out the path. It can be very difficult. And here's the other thing I'm starting to realize. Guess what? You don't have to figure it out now.
Yeah. That's what I told Phoebe. I said, look, when I was your age, I was going to be a sports medicine guy. Then I was going to be a comedian. Then I was going to be a lawyer. Then I was going to sell vacuum cleaners. Then I was just like, I was just wide open to anything. Anything that someone would pay me to do, because I just didn't have any self-confidence. I couldn't envision being anything really important. And I didn't find this job until 36. So, you know.
Yeah, and so what's going to happen when you finally do figure out what you want?
Yeah, I'll end up being a chocolatier.
Well, we know you're already that.
Yeah, right?
Do you know that, Rammer? He made fancy chocolates at Bissinger's.
Yeah.
Well, he's always been a little fancy, and I mean that.
He's always the kind of guy you'd expect to be putting chocolate drippings on bonbons.
I kind of like that. It sounds very exciting.
So the voice of the Billikens, I'm so in on the Billikens this year. I'm excited the guys we brought back, like Jimerson. I'm excited about the new guys we have, like Avila. Get him back in. How are you feeling about the team?
Yeah, you know, early on, guardedly optimistic because I've been trying to learn about Coach Schertz's system. And you played some basketball. Mm-hmm. All of our listeners have been around the game, and it's a different take on the game, the way they want to play. I was doing games when the three-point line was instituted in college basketball. Mm-hmm. And all for the last three decades, it's been, okay, you got to have the high percentage to make it be valuable. Well, Coach Schertz doesn't agree. He believes in volume. Now, certainly you don't want to go 1 for 50, but if you can hit enough threes in a game, it's going to give you an edge no matter what the other team does. And so it's a whole different mindset that I'm trying to learn, and I think our fans need to be open-minded to kind of realize that as well.
Yeah, I like his whole vibe. I mean, I know that's like an overused kind of modern term, but I like the way he approaches the game. I like the way he approaches the team.
I do too. First of all, he's brilliant. And he reminds me in many ways, in particular with his attention to detail, with the great Rick Majerus.
I knew you were going to say that, Rammer.
However, Coach Schertz's style is completely different. I never see him yell. I'm not saying he doesn't. I don't see him yell. I think he figures it's a better way to communicate, to talk to people, mm-hmm. and not yell and not be overbearing. And so the attention to detail and the teaching style, I think, is a very good one. And I'm trying to learn along with the players and our fans as to what we're going to expect and what we're going to see as we get into the season.
Yeah, we're only two games in, so you had the loss against Santa Clara, which was a really good competitive game.
Yeah, it was.
You know, they got away a little bit probably after Robbie Avila ended up going out of the game with an ankle injury. Yeah. And we'll ask you about that in a second. But, you know, actually, just tie it into this. I mean, when do you think we will be able to kind of get a good feel for what we can expect once the A-10 starts? Because early on, you're learning a new system, and now we got a couple of weeks, it looks like, at least, without, you know, the guy that might end up being your best all-around player, your big man in Avila, who has the most good nicknames of any modern player in college basketball.
Yeah. How about this, though, Wheels? As a guy who has been in these games, I'm reluctant to use the nicknames that have already been done because I don't want to be hacky. For a guy who says bang all the time and jam time, I got enough hackiness in my game already.
So we'll just call him Robbie.
We'll call him Robbie. We'll come up with something. And by the way, I'll take suggestions from the DGS anytime.
Love it.
Awesome. So, you know, when you look at he's clearly central to what the team is going to be.
No doubt.
I mean, he does everything well. I mean, it's funny because the appearance belies what he is. I mean, he's a great passer.
He's not a good athlete, let's be honest.
No, he's not.
Doesn't look like it.
No, but he does is there a bigger throwback in college basketball? The guy that looks like he could have played for the Celtics in the 50s and 60s.
You know, that is a great call, and I agree 100%. The thing I love about Robbie, and didn't know till I started going to practices all the way back in June, is how he is an extension of Josh Schertz. On the court, he's always teaching, and I think he realized that, you know, Isaiah Swope came with him from Indiana State, but other than that, everybody else is new and new to the system, and so he has really embraced the leadership and the teaching aspect for his game in particular, and I think it's really going to work, and the idea about getting people healthy and kind of understanding more who we are by the time Christmas rolls around and conference play starts, I think that is a realistic litmus test. Let's let these guys figure it out. I don't want to accept bad performances, but to kind of realize who's going to be what with this team, what their roles will be, what the rotation will be, I think it will take a few weeks. I agree.
Probably don't need to remind you who we're talking to because the voice is so familiar. It's Bob Ramsey, the voice of the Billikens. Bob, before we let you go, let's talk a little Cardinals. How are you feeling about this offseason?
Well, I'm a little disappointed in sort of the sometimes spoken and sometimes not. You know, is it a retool? Is it a, you know, re-whatever? And that concerns me a little. And not because I don't trust young people to perform, grow into the game, but because I don't want to accept being non-competitive. I think young players can win, but you got to play the game the right way. And the so-called Cardinal way, in my view, has been lost for a few years. Mm. Can they get back to that? Can that player development result with good play on the field? If you play the right way, you don't always have to have gaudy numbers. And I think there you can have a mix there. So I'm not ready to give up on 2025, and some folks may call me naive in that regard, but I'm still hopeful that this can be a competitive team even with a great influx of youth.
Yeah, I mean, there's a pathway for it. I mean, you just came off a year where your two biggest stars had bad years, and your next biggest star hitter missed half the year with injuries. So I think that's a good way to look at it, Rammer, that, yeah, it's okay to retool, and it's okay to go young where you went old last year, right?
I mean, the guys who performed for us last year are back next year.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the guys that hurt you the most would have been Goldschmidt, who had a bad year, Arenado, who seems likely to be traded at some point here this offseason, and then, you know, then the injuries to Contreras. Those are your supposed to be your three biggest bats. You missed most of that during the year. There's a path for this next group to be better than last year's group, just because it's not likely that that many things go wrong. Plus, I think, I don't know, I'm sure you agree with this to a degree, Rammer, but, you know, sometimes replacing a known commodity who's old and on the downside is not that hard when you're talking about a younger guy with upside who might be better than the guy that you know is near the end. I'm not picking on Lance Lynn or anything like that. I'm just saying that there are young pitchers that might be a lot better than that just didn't get a chance.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing about that is too often when we want to project and look forward, we automatically look at the unknown as a negative, and it doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
All right, buddy, we appreciate it. All the best to the Billikens, and let's get you back on the think tank soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Women's soccer, NCAA tournament at home at 7 o'clock on Friday, and the men play Loyola Marymount 7 o'clock on Saturday. It'll be fun at Jula Midtown this weekend.
All right, buddy. Thank you, Rammer.
See you guys.
252 DGS. Always good to talk to Rammer. So, Cardinals winter warm-up is back this year?
Yeah, how about that? So they just made the announcement official today. They've given all the details. It's going to be the 18th to the 20th of January. It's going to be back. It's at, you know, this is so much different now. I just mentioned this in the break to you guys, but having it at the stadium, at Ballpark Village, the Hall of Fame being there, I think, such a better experience. Even though it was great when it was at a hotel, because it was at a couple of different hotels downtown at various points, those are always cool. But I think it's even better when you've got the ballpark, because they do ballpark tours and clubhouse tours. And obviously the Hall of Fame is there, and you get all the different speaking engagements. Plus, you have all the food and stuff that's already there.
Is it mostly an autograph thing?
I think for a lot of people it is. But, you know, they have panel discussions where Mo will be up on stage, take questions from the audience, usually moderated by someone like Tom or me back in the day when I was doing pre and post game. Matt Pauly will be a big part of a lot of those things, too. The players are all there doing interviews, and then they obviously sign autographs and all of that. And there's memorabilia and just all kinds of
cool
baseball nerd stuff. And apparently this year, I just saw this a minute ago, so let me find it, that if you buy the ticket between November 29th and December 8th, you will get a free mystery autograph ticket. So all the autographs are for purchase for people that don't know, but it's all money that goes to charity. It all goes to Cardinals Care, so it's usually,
you know, one of the things
baseball
that the DeWitts talked about is they're going to up their game when it comes to the game experience.
Yeah.
Are you an eye roller? Like, just put a product on the field and we'll come and we'll worry about the hide the ball game later? Or are you it's about damn time?
For me, none of that stuff matters, personally. For me, all that matters is there's going to be a game, and I don't care how good the teams are. I don't care what the stakes are of that game. I just want to watch a Major League Baseball game. But I'm the freak. Like, I'm the rare one. That's not most people. I think there's no question that they have to learn some lessons from what other teams are doing around the league with the game day presentation. I mean, if you go to a game now, it's not a lot different than going to a game in 2011. A lot of the same songs you'll hear at the ballpark, a lot of the same games that are being played, you know, people shooting T-shirts into the stands. And those things are all fine and dandy, but there's so much more that you can do to turn it into an event, to make it more fun, to make it more, not to interrupt with the game, but just to make it more of a vibe. And, like, just as an example, a lot of teams now have these great presentations when the closer comes into the game.
Yeah.
They got their big song. They have the lights flashing. It looks like a concert. It's like fun and people get into it. More of that will help. It's not going to trump a mediocre team or a bad team, but it adds to the experience and it certainly helps when you start to get good too.
Only 30 seconds to answer this, but how do you feel like the Cardinals Nation is coming along so far in this young offseason?
You mean just the vibe?
Yeah.
I think there's still a lot of doubt about what's going to happen. There's a lot of nervousness about how far they're going to slash payroll. But mostly, I think it's been reasonable in the feedback that I've gotten. I think most people are like, okay, we did need to see some changes, but it better not be too drastic. That's kind of the vibe I get.
Typical people complaining in the typical ways?
Yeah, for the most part. And some people saying, okay, well, the biggest complaint people have is, well, you still have Mo in charge. And I think that makes total sense to leave him in charge, though, because you're letting Chaim Bloom do one part,
yeah,
which is redo one part of the organization. Doing two things at once is not going to be be very productive.
Agreed.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.